Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Tammy Schaffstall. I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida, and I'll be your host tonight. I'm also a survivor of child abuse. Tonight's show is an open mic forum, a question and answer. We have a professional. Our co-host tonight is Barbara Joy Hansen. Barbara Joy is from Milford, Massachusetts. Her award-winning memoir, Listen to the Cry of the Child, describes her childhood world of violence. She was victimized from the age of 2 to 8 by her grandfather, sexually assaulted at the age of 11 and 12 by a youth pastor, and raped at the age of 18. She suffered sexual addictions in her marriage, causing severe complex trauma resulting in PTSD. After 38 years, Barbara Joy, Beauty Out of Ashes, a support group that has had many media interviews, including the Dr. Oz Show. Her humanitarian aid work has been taken to the Philippines, and a 4-minute YouTube film of her experience that can be seen on her website, www.listentothecry.org. She has a God-given passion, purpose, and advocacy calling for helping survivors everywhere, including prisoners and sex offenders all over the world. So it's always a pleasure to have Barbara Joy with us. Before we get started with the show, if you'd like to call in, we definitely need some people to call in, because at this point it's just me and Barbara Joy, and we'd love to have some people participate. It's a very, very friendly show. The telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Let me tell you a little bit about NASCA before we get started. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization and was self-supporting through our own contributions. If you'd like to donate to NASCA, we can definitely use the money and put it to good use, and it is tax deductible. I'm stuttering tonight. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. First, we educate the public, especially getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. And we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Again, we'd love to have people call in. That number is 646-595-2118. I'd like to also welcome the people that we know are streaming in. If you are streaming in and you've been, you know, on the fence as to whether you wanted to call in, tonight would be a really good night. So if not, I'd like to welcome all our streamers as well. Thank you for joining us. Well, I'm going to go and open Barbara Joy's mic. Barbara Joy, how are you tonight?
Hi. I heard a man's voice on a minute ago. Did somebody call in?
No. Nope, just me and you.
Okay. We can hang
out. Oh, gosh, I hope I'm not starting to, I hope I'm not starting to sound like a man.
No, it wasn't you. I don't mind hanging out with
you, Tammy.
I'm going
to have to work on that.
That's okay.
Okay, that may have been my gruff voice. You know, I've been fighting quitting cigarettes, and that's one of the things. I know my voice is changing because of them, so that's all the more reason to quit.
I never smoked, but I heard that's the last link to the chain.
Yeah. So that's not good at all.
I've never heard that before, but.
No, I used to have my sweet southern voice, but not so much anymore. Well, hopefully some people will call in. I know a lot of times you invite folks. Bill, if you're listening, call in. So if not, we'll just go ahead and get started. If it's me and you, it's me and you. We can make a show. We do know we have lots of people who do stream in, so even though it may be just you and I on the panel, we know we are reaching a lot of people out there. So what
I put it out on about 13 or 14 sites, so it did get out. I had a disturbing comment just a couple of minutes ago from somebody that was on the NASCA site, because I put it on a whole lot of other sites as well, and they said, I hope you don't put disturbing videos out again, and I'm thinking, I don't know what he's talking about, because this is a podcast, right? It's a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked him, I said, well, I haven't put any videos out. This is a podcast radio show, so I'm not sure what you're referring to. So he let it go for a day or so, and just this evening, a couple of minutes ago, he said he got a disturbing video. Now, I don't know if this was on NASCA, because he said he brought it to the head of NASCA, and they didn't do anything. It was bestiology. And I said, well, I'm sure if it was brought to the attention of someone on NASCA, it had nothing to do with any of us from NASCA, because these are all, you know, that's definitely inappropriate. But I just thought I'd throw that out.
Well, I am an administrator on our NASCA site. If I saw something like that, I can guarantee you that I would delete it. I haven't seen anything on the messenger of anything like that. I'm kind of scrolling through it now. If I see something like that, not only will I delete it, I'll ban whoever posted.
Yeah,
because that is inappropriate.
You'd block them. Yeah.
Every once in a while,
because it brought triggers, and he had children in the house or something to that end. So if you go on NASCA, I'm not sure if it's the public or the private NASCA site, you might see his comment. You could look for it tomorrow.
What's his name?
I don't remember. I just shut my off.
That's okay.
It probably isn't good to put it on air anyway.
No, and I go through there quite a bit, you know, not every day.
Yeah,
but
you'll see
if somebody does reach out, I will delete it, and I'll take care of it.
What I told them was, I said, when people call in, we might have to, you know, get somebody off the air that's saying something, or, you know, talking loudly or has background noise or whatever. So, you know, you're very sensitive to people like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's what he was referring to. So,
no, my guess is somebody posted something inappropriate on our NASCA Facebook website, and we get that. We had somebody not too long ago, and it's so tacky. They put sexual pictures on there, and you know,
well,
it's not appropriate.
Right.
Yeah, and so you know, we deleted immediately and then cut that person off. You know, a lot of times when you have a large group like that, we have, you know, 6,000 people on that on that site, and then some people you know, they'll put spam. You know, we try
mm-hmm.
to vet them, because you know when I add somebody, you can see, you know, if have they been a part of Facebook for, you know, since 2012,
right.
or did they just sign up 2 days ago?
Right.
You know, and a lot of
people
sign up 2 days
or,
ago with spam.
You know, if I saw something like that, I'd definitely alert you or somebody else, because that's very offensive to me too.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. And a lot of times if they reached out to Bill, you know, somebody else may have deleted, or just like now I'm scrolling through it thinking, where is it? Where is it? Is it there? If it is, I'm going to find it and I'm going to get rid of it. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe I don't scroll down far enough. Maybe, you know, something has happened and we just don't put our hands on it. But I can guarantee
we'll
make the effort to get that.
Yeah, you'll see it according to my show, because when I put it out there with my show for tonight, that person reached out to me that way. So it would be on NASCA Private or NASCA Public, and it would be when I put my show out. So you don't have to do it tonight, but maybe tomorrow you can take a look.
Well,
so,
I'll keep scrolling through it as we get started with the show. We do have another caller, and it's area code 850. Area code 50, who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hi, it's Pastor Deborah.
Pastor Deborah.
Hi, Pastor Deborah.
Yeah, Bobby Joe invited me to come on and listen, so I'm multitasking doing some computer work, so I thought I'd call in. She was real nice to send me an email and invite me to come in and listen. So I'm listening.
Okay,
well, thank you for being
a
voice. Yes. And I forget where you're from. Where are you from, Deborah?
Pensacola, Florida. It's along the Gulf Coast, sort of right along with Mobile, Alabama, and New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
that part.
New Orleans.
And then there's the other part of Florida.
I'm in Florida as well. I'm in South Florida. I'm above.
Yeah, you're
right
the
above.
Other part.
Oh, the other part. I'm right above Miami. You know, I'm in between Fort Lauderdale mm-hmm. and Boca Raton. So
yeah,
thank you, Pastor Dean, for calling in.
Yeah,
all right. Well, we have.
Go ahead. I'm just listening.
Okay. Well, we have three people. Again, I'm Tammy Schaffstall. I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida. We have our guest professional speaker, Barbara Joy, who was calling in from Massachusetts. And we have
mm-hmm.
Pastor Deborah from Florida. So we've got ourselves a show. And again, you know, welcome to the people who are streaming in. Barbara Joy,
yeah,
I'm going
to
do what I normally do.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was going to quickly say, I heard a little bit about those unwanted people posting. And on my
uh-huh.
YouTube channel, I had to put a comment that says, any sexual content comments would be of children or adults or free links. Because I was getting comments of just with a blue highlight that when I checked it out, it goes to a sexual website. And they
mm-hmm.
were subscribers. Okay, and they're just sort of spam. So I actually put on every video that if any of those kind of comments or about free services or merchandise or political parties
mm-hmm.
or platforms will be removed immediately. And I have to watch. And eventually, if you do it and you remove them and you put that, you know, to cover your little fanny, if you put that up on your thing somewhere, then if you had to, you know, it's you're stating it that it will be removed. It's totally inappropriate, and you know, you have to watch. So I have done it now. They don't do that anymore because I catch them, you know, and I see some comments on the YouTube videos, and I recognize their blue link because I've clicked on them to see who they are. They don't
mm-hmm.
say anything. And I'll
mm-hmm.
see where they go, and I'll see them on others, and nobody's really going through that. And so you have to be diligent. Somebody got to be
mm-hmm.
dedicated to doing that, but you put up on the somewhere on the NASCA website or whatever you're talking about that comment. These kind of links, services, pictures, content, because they are trying, you know, to do all sorts of things. And I had to put that on everyone, so I just wanted to say, yeah, it's going to come. Then we have to, you know, if they need help. And but you have to
Got
be
it.
Very diligent about it, and you have to state somewhere on there what the policies are and what you will do. And I guess you could report it to somebody that you have, and you would they would go and look at your statement, and they could say yes, and you could report it, I guess, to you too. But
yeah, you can do that.
All out there, you know. But
you can do that on Facebook too, because I've seen some very inappropriate things on Facebook with children having sex with children, and I've reported that.
And you have to be, and what you're doing by putting a statement out like that. So I know you're out there, and if you put it, it will be removed immediately. It's totally inappropriate. And so I have that on every video. It's then when I even podcast it out, it's there. So people know, because I've had that happen to me, and I remove it immediately. So I just wanted to make that. That's all.
Okay,
now
cool.
I listen.
Okay, well, we do have some disclaimers out there, and we do have some group rules and stuff, and we do have administrators, and we have one person who, you know, she'll be really diligent about going through it, and the rest of us kind of lax off, and then, you know, it's just like anything else, you know, life happens, and, you know, she goes somewhere else, and so then we'll get a couple of, you know, hey, you need to go out there and check your Facebook, and I'll go in there, and I'll start scrolling through it. And, you know, and then I'll get into the habit of getting back in there and say, okay, what is this? Nope, this has got to go. This has got to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't go up. It's not too bad. You can go in there and you can block them for like 2 or 3 days. And I've done that to some people that it's not that bad. And I don't want to kick them out of the group, but that's inappropriate. I go monkey nuts when I see pictures of beaten and battered children. And I know that people think that they're putting it out there to bring awareness. But to me,
that happens a lot on LinkedIn. It really does. To me, it
further exploits the child, and it triggers people. It triggers survivors.
Well,
so I'll delete them right away, and I'll put a note up there. This is inappropriate.
Well, that would be, you know, a lot of people who are trying to bring awareness to this, they really haven't had any training on triggering what this picture does. A lot of the human trafficking with the tape on the mouth is not correct. And the handcuffs and stuff, and they're trying to get attention, and they're trying to bring awareness, but there's not a lot of classes, so maybe NASCA could make a video or something on Facebook and say, if you're posting on your place or LinkedIn or whatever, these kind of posts and pictures are not appropriate to helping, you know, survivors. They trigger. I have found people are just uneducated about, we'll call it, communication, using pictures and visuals. And, you know, they're trying the best they know how to bring awareness, but they don't understand.
Sure.
And so you can make some videos or educational materials and be aware of that so that people aren't traumatizing, triggering. And
My latest my latest webinar, Teens and Dating Violence, PowerPoint presentation is full of awareness education and some pretty things that people need to understand about abuse of all kinds. So I do training and Tammy's right on it, so I don't think you have to worry about it. I just wanted to bring that up at the top of the show. I don't think we have to keep talking about it, though.
All right,
okay,
I'm going to listen now. Okay. Wait.
No, what I'd like to do now is I'm going to turn the mic over to Barbara Joy so she can say a few words as our professional guest speaker and, you know, set the tone to what she wants to talk about. So, Barbara Joy, the mic is yours.
Okay. Usually I start out with a question, and I'm going to read something prior to the question, and it says, my grandfather died today. He was outgoing and loving, a pillar of the church, and did much for our community. Everyone respected him until they were aware of a very dark family secret. Until I was in my late 20s, no one in our family would talk about the fact that Grandpa was a pedophile. He molested members of our family, myself included, and God knows how many others. there were many excuses why no one in the family would discuss it. Denial was a means of coping, and some of us rationalized. That was a long time ago. They said, why bring up the past? Grandpa eventually found himself facing charges of molesting a young neighbor girl. The outcome? He ran from the law to another state where he lived the rest of his life. Our legal system lacks the funds to pursue a pedophile in another state. One good thing that resulted from Grandpa being officially charged was that our family finally started to talk about it. In my gut, I always knew there was something wrong, but I had buried the past so completely that it took several years before I was able to admit it, even to myself. There are mothers who know that their husbands are molesting their children, or grandfathers, or uncles, or cousins. I hope my experience causes others to come out with the truth. So my question is, were you molested by a parent, grandpa, uncle, brother, etc., and you allowed those pedophiles to spend time with your children?
Okay.
So I can answer that question as far as myself goes. I was molested by my grandfather from the age of 2 to 8, and I had, being that little, I couldn't tell my mother, and she couldn't protect me. And so as an adult parent, we have 3 sons. When they were little, we would go to my grandmother and grandfather's home, but Grandpa always took me out in his car and did things to himself and to me. So, yes, did I watch them? No, did I allow him to take them out for anything? They were always around my eyes and around us. I was in denial until I was in my 40s, but that, you know, I did very much watch our children as much as I could. Anybody else?
Yes, I can answer that. You know, a lot of times, as we know the statistics of the child abuse that happens within the family, a lot of us are faced with, you know, do we continue to have a relationship, you know, with our family, or do we divorce, you know, ourselves from our family? That's a personal choice that everybody has to make. And mm-hmm. I'm not going to say there's a right or wrong answer, because I've done both. You know, I didn't talk to my mom for 5 years. My mom's old. She chose to stay with my stepfather. You know, he's there through the years. And that's a tough one. You know, unlike you, you know, if my kids went over there, you know, we spent Christmas there. They never babysat my kids. You know, they were never left alone. I never gave them that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go over to my mom's house in short periods. But, yes, I mean, my kids were around my stepfather. My nieces were around my stepfather. And I know at one point my niece had brought her kid over there. You know, my nieces are grown. And she had brought her kid over there, and they were babysitting them. And my mom said something, and it triggered me so badly. She said, "Alan, what was the kid's name? I can't remember the kid's name. Oh gosh, she's my great niece. Gosh, I don't remember. You know, Melissa, whatever her name. I can't remember my own grandniece's name. I'll think of it later. But my mother says, boy, she sure does love Alan. And the trigger that went over me,
yeah.
I had a cold chill come over me.
Yeah.
Because I remember my mother saying that about my sister, who he, you know, molested more than me, you know, more than me. He tried to groom me. He couldn't. You know, he tried to steal my innocence. He couldn't. Not that I'm any stronger than anybody else, but you know, he wasn't able to groom me. But I was made to be a liar for years. But he you know, molested my sister for years, you know. And so I remember my mother saying, boy, Carlene sure does love Alan. And when she said that about Amber, you know, when she said that about Amber, Amber sure does love Alan. It sent a cold chill down my spine. And I told my sister, I said, you better tell your daughter not to leave her kid over there with Alan. You know, the babysitting. Mm-hmm. I said, Carlene, And she did. She had a talk with her, and she told her, you know, and you don't want to bring up, you know, what had happened in the past. You know, it's been painful enough, but, you know, you just not let your kids. So, you know, the grandkids really didn't have exposure because Carlene didn't leave her kids over there, and I didn't leave my kids over there. But their kids, you know, they were oblivious to it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, it happens. And, you know, and a lot of times it repeats. You know, you have the grandfather molested the kids, and next thing you know, they're molesting their kids. It happens.
Right. So. Or the grandfather's molesting the cousins and my mother and on, like in my family, it's generational. He continued to and never got caught. And he died at 101. I kept wishing he'd die earlier. And I couldn't do anything until he died. And then I faced the clergy for having done it to me. So at least I did come forward with healing, thank God, and facing all my past. But we have a responsibility to teach our children what good touch and bad touch is. And back in the day, you know, because we weren't trained and we weren't taught, I mean, my mother never talked to me about any of that, or my dad, and so you remain silent. But it's a choice that we must make. Two of the most damaging results of sexual abuse are shame and isolation. And you, Tammy, protected the family at all costs. And what happened is other kids could have been neighbor kids. You know, any kid in the family or on the neighborhood could have been molested. But you just didn't have the power or the words to tell. So you can't you can't blame yourself.
Right. Exactly.
Healing doesn't begin until the facts are brought out in the open and discussed among all the parties. And most families are not willing to discuss, you know, anything. And in my support group, there's a chapter, The Family in Darkness. And I read that chapter today, and it's powerful. Family issues have a tremendous effect on sexual abuse recovery, especially incest. That is the most damaging sexual abuse with a child, whether it's a father, uncle, brother. And then if the mother knows about it, maybe she's walked in and seen him and kind of ignored it, then you're going to have extreme anger towards your mother. And my mother didn't walk in. And she just was in so much denial herself, so she couldn't not send me out with him. I think she was just in such denial and didn't understand. Maybe, yeah. So, but a child molested by an uncle may feel unprotected by both the parents, and a victim of rape may feel she can't disclose the fact that her family, that fact to her family, because her family is emotionally shut down and incapable. Because back then, we didn't have any knowledge, we didn't have any support, we didn't have anybody to tell. The only one I told was my best friend, my girlfriend, who was also a pastor's daughter that lived right down the street from me, and she's the only one I told. And then she told me that her brother had a skeleton key to her room, and she put the dresser against when she realized he was coming in the middle of the night. And she had an out-of-body experience and, you know, was molested by him. But once she realized it, she put the dresser against the door and he couldn't come in. But she didn't tell her father. And but it was something that she and I talked about a little bit, but not really much, until I became an adult and I flew to Michigan to visit her. And I asked her, I said, did I ever tell you anything? Oh, yeah, you told me. And then that led, and I don't think I've ever said this. I know I didn't say it in my book, but then she and I had sleepovers, and we would play childhood games and have the light out, and we'd take our finger and put it over on the other one's body, and if it would go to your head or your chest or wherever it would land, you'd have to guess where it landed. And that, you know, I think a lot of abuse survivors have behavior like that
mm-hmm.
and play supposedly childhood games.
Right. Pastor Deborah, what do you think?
Code of silence is pretty much in every family.
Yes.
And I grew up in a military family. Now, there wasn't sexual abuse, but there was other kind. Codes of silence.
Sure.
And and nobody tells you to not talk. The children, you know, when we're young, we're very smart. We look around and we see things, and we just watch our parents and our brothers or sisters or uncles. And we hear people talking, you know, and we get looks, you know, and we learn. You don't talk. And, you know, we hear the things, oh, that's just your uncle, you know, or that's him. People know, but like you said, denial. It's the way that the soul and the mind survive. Because
mm-hmm.
it's something mm-hmm. that is learned. You know, our parents had issues, and in their family, they learned how to deal with them and survive. Some children,
mm-hmm.
as we know, they run and they leave home.
Mm-hmm.
And I get real upset with a lot of people in human trafficking because they say the human traffickers, whether they're on social media or kids at school in the neighborhood, are grooming the child. The grooming has already been done by the parents.
Right.
Or whoever the family. And there's a big emptiness. There's rejection, abandonment, whatever it is. The child is looking usually for love, somebody that is loving to them. But the code of silence is in every family. And if the children did tell somebody, they don't want to believe it because it's such a, sex is still a very taboo subject in most
right.
cultures. Now, in other cultures, in some, it is acceptable. It's
I
what's
know.
Done to, okay, depending on, we'll say, culture, in some religions, it is acceptable to marry 8 and 9 year olds. And what they're told is until they hit puberty, you just come in the backside instead of the front.
Mm-hmm.
Religion will put its stamp. They just had another thing. I'm sure you know this, Bobby Joe, about another case of, I think it maybe was Louisiana, about some clergy priest. And once you, mental health counseling, which I used to be one, they really don't see it so much as an addiction. And they don't, they're having trouble defining it. What is a pedophile? And it's somebody that loves children. Lambda says, we do this to little boys because we're showing them love. Okay? So sex and love is so intertwined. Children want to please. And parents, adults, or even other children, in the biblical sense, it's called the lust of the flesh and
right.
the lust of the eyes. And they don't mm-hmm. have that part of them under control, under, you know, we all have eyes, we all see, and if you're not trained in how to do that, so it's a taboo subject. People don't want to talk about it. The
mm-hmm.
parents, the child, you're born into whatever family you get. You don't know anything about your parents, your older brother or sisters or aunts or uncles. You just get dumped in, and they probably all got issues. And you learn as a small child how you deal with them. You don't say anything. You don't question. And it's only till later. And yet, at some point deep, the child feels, my mother's not protecting me. My father, so there's a deep form of, you're supposed to be protecting me. And people don't realize the parent, especially the mom, provides that anchor for the soul. So when that love connection, that protection is cut, whatever, some people believe this is how, this is what love is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're special. You're, you have, I'm your favorite one.
Yeah, you're told
you love
that.
Me. And so it is all, nobody wants it. The church doesn't want to talk about it.
That's right. I didn't
get any of this in high school, in my sex education class. They don't teach this to licensed counselors working in psychology. You get a lot of this just on the physical and sexual part of it. If you're going to be like a guardian ad litem or an advocate for children, but you don't get into the what's wrong with this person. And how does psychology define this? It is a crime, but they can't tell if you're mentally ill. Is it addiction? Why do you do this? You know, they got no answers for it. And children really, you know, are powerless. And so what happens is us as advocates, we have to know all of that. And then like what Bobby Joe does so well is you've got to educate, we'll say teens,
right,
or even children who are going to grow up one day, either with their issues, and that it's okay to go to therapy. And there are some bad pastors out there, some bad church people, some bad priests. We know that.
Right.
And that's not right. And so we have to be educating. The children are going to grow up, and it's okay, like, to go tell the policeman. But I've been where the parents go to a pastor, and the pastor covers it up.
Oh, that happened in my church, and I blew the whistle.
That just happened, too, in the world of women's gymnastics. They went to the FBI, and they did nothing. Okay. And they had other people. Who was that guy, Joe? Up there at the University of Pennsylvania. That guy was doing little kids in the college showers. And everybody knew it. And nobody says anything. And so there's a code of silence among the men. The children, they don't know. You know,
that's
they
right.
have no idea.
And they're not
really
being trained in seminary.
No.
Until my case came forward with my childhood denomination, the Christian and Missionary Alliance, and they had to do something, and they had to start training, and they do it now in the Alliance Theological Seminary, which is in New York City. It used to be in Nyack, New York, and they just moved to New York City. And I'm very pleased to say that they do training. They do excellent training. And they teach about what sexual abuse is and what it does, and how the church needs to step up to the plate and acknowledge and understand. When my case came forward, the year before mine came forward, 30-some missionary kids in Mema, Africa, in the middle of the jungle, were molested and were violated in various forms of abuse. And so when my case came forward the next year, they set up a committee for those kids who now have become gay. They've left the church. They have, you know, turned against God. They've turned against family. So you're right. So much more needs to be done, especially in the churches and in our homes. But if the family won't talk about it, and most generally,
they
don't want to.
I can understand. There'll be people like you, Bobby Joe, or people that are, we'll say older, you know, that can do the educating. They don't want to talk about, you know, especially in Christianity. You try to talk
I've
to
lost
an
friends and family, but you know what? I don't care because my voice matters, your voice matters, Tammy's matters, and we need to help each other. This is a NASCA family that understands abuse, and it understands that we're not listened to. Well, we are on this show. But because of our abuse in our past, there's generations of sexual abuse with ignorance, shame, anger, and the perpetrators and co-perpetrators are incapable of helping you get support. So when the first knowledge I had was at age 8 that something wasn't quite right. And I avoided my grandfather at all costs, and that stopped it. And then I went to this, you know, youth camp at 11, and he came back two summers in a row. The youth pastor was 27. And he had access to all these little kids, all the young people, all the preteens. And then one of my best friends was molested, and she's had a couple of abortions. She was a nurse. She's gone through sexual abuse with the same pastor and became an alcoholic and a drug addict. And now she's got a wonderful husband and children, but my mother took her in because her own parents, being a clergy and wife, refused to take her in. And yet her mother took in foster children, and she thought her mother would take the baby and nobody would know, and her mother said, oh no, they'd know it's your baby. And I mean, what a slap on the face for her. But my mother took her in, and the baby was given up by adoption. And she feels close to that child. He's an adult now, and both adoptive parents have died, and he's reconnected with her, and she feels very, very close to him. So good came out of it. Not always does that happen with adoption. And we adopted our firstborn, too, because I was incapable of conceiving. We went through years of infertility, not knowing that it had to do with the child abuse and the rape and the things that I had experienced. But you learn the older you get and the stronger you get and the more courageous that you get. And you need to express the anger towards those that have hurt you. I was told by one of my counselors, a woman in my church quite a few years ago, said, you need to go to everybody that has harmed you, if possible, and tell them how they hurt you or how they didn't help you. And that was very therapeutic for me to do, plus going to the clergy, which I never had any intentions in doing, but that was very needed in my inner soul healing and restoration.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we'll say the enemy of children has learned is that you put an authoritative figure, parent, uncle, grandpa, with a child, they take advantage of that authority. And pastors are the same way. You don't touch the anointed of God, whether it's a youth pastor, a children's pastor, a gymnast, you know, the gymnast, he was a medical doctor. When I was in licensed mental health counseling, we had ethical rules. We had to take classes on ethics of the profession. We were not allowed to have any kind of business dealings with our clients, have any kind of personal relationships, meet with them. It was strictly business. And because we knew we were working with somebody who was in a lower position, sort of on authority, had some issues, and we were looked at as a medical professional way on up there. So the church has used that to keep the silence. And people are afraid of losing their positions, their whatever you want to call it in the community. Women a lot of times are afraid, I'll get divorced, he'll leave me, what will I have? I can't, maybe my parents told me not to marry him, I did anyway, I don't want them.
Right.
So there's a lot that goes on. I think Joyce Myers talks a lot about, she knew her mom knew but would never say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I saw, you'll see, it was given to the men, the fathers, to do the discipline. The women, you know, that was probably when we were younger.
Right.
Your dad's going to deal with you when he gets home from work. But women turned a lot of that over and said nothing. But was that culture? Was that their parenting? Was that from the church? Was that how it was supposed to happen? You go to the principal. If you get in trouble at school, you go to the police. People of authority. And men And there's women that abuse kids too. They take advantage of a little innocent child. And if you're a Christian, that is part of the enemy of children's plan to get them abused, get implanted in them all kinds of things so they can't hear God's voice. They can't, you know, they're not whole anymore. Because it's like, I can't touch you, God, but I will touch something you love. So I'm sticking a stick right in your heart by getting to this child. Because that's how he works. It's sort of a, you know, that kind of thing. But in mental health counseling, you know, there was one psychiatrist. He said, you know, he worked with a lot of women. And the philosophy was we need to hypnotize them, a lot of training, and have them, you know, re-go back through all of that. And he said, I'm not going to do that to them. That's re-traumatize them. A lot of therapists believe that that's what you're to do. And I don't know, Bobby Joe, were you around in, I would say, the 70s, the 80s, when the false memory syndrome came about? Did you know anything about that?
Well, I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Okay, what was happening in the 80s? A lot of adults were getting in therapy. They were depressed, having issues. They got in there with therapists. I don't know if it was social workers or psychologists or what. And they were starting to remember that it was their parents or their father or their mother or their brother that had abused them or allowed it to happen when they were children. So the therapist was saying, well, you need to bring criminal charges against them. And so the client of the therapist started doing that. And it was all over the country. And the parents rose up and formed this false memory syndrome, went to court. And they basically were suing the therapist for convincing and implanting these memories into this person. And it didn't happen. So a lot of your therapists backed off. And I'll just deal with your depression. And they're not going to go there because they would get sued by the parents. They end up in court. So a lot of that was going on in the early 80s and 90s here in America. So a lot of adult children or teens go, what's the use, you know? If I look sort of like those girls with the Jeunesse, I went to the FBI. They did nothing. Okay? Mm-hmm. And they don't know why. And the FBI said, oh, well, there's some bad actors, you know. And there's no repercussions and all kinds of things, and everybody turns a blind eye. So it happens in every profession, whether it's Catholic priest. You know,
right. Well, when my friend told when she was, I think, 12, she went to her parents, who were a clergy in the denomination at the camp, and she said, she just told me that this summer because I didn't know what she had, how she had told. And she said, yeah, I told my parents when I was about 12 and it was happening. So they went to the district superintendent in the denomination at the camp, and he said, oh, he's one of my boys? No, not one of my boys. And so he was sent to the Bahamas to further do youth ministry, to further harm children, and until we brought him forward. And I didn't even know he'd still be alive. This was like 40 years later. And it was incredible that he was still alive. Yes, he was in complete denial. But it was the hardest thing I ever did in my life, but it was necessary to my healing. And I never would have this kind of a ministry or mission work with survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence and human trafficking in the Philippines and all over the world had I not faced him and wrote a chapter about that in my book. I had to document it as soon as I came home, or I wanted to, because I knew I would forget some of the details. And it was very profound because only 7 weeks later I got a phone call, and the head of the committee said, "Are you sitting down?" And I said, "No, but I will." He was crying, and he said, "You're the perpetrator that you just faced 7 weeks ago fell down the stairs and broke his back and died." And mm-hmm. yet I was able to forgive him. He did reach out and said, "I don't know if you can find it in your heart to forgive me." And at that time, I didn't believe that he really was sincere, because I said, "You need to run into recovery for everybody you've harmed, because you've hurt, like this coach, hundreds
yeah, yeah.
of kids from campground to campground." Uh-huh. But somebody just recently told me, yes, if he asked you if you can find it in your heart, you did forgive him. Then you let him, you know, you didn't let him off the hook, because he'll face God someday. And
mm-hmm.
I don't have to be his judge or his jury. But, yeah, it's so prevalent. And it's just something that, you know, I don't know how it is with you, Tammy, but when somebody finds out that you're going to go on a show, say, like tonight, with sexual abuse, or that you're going to, or that you've been through it, they look at you with such a shocked look on their face, like, they don't even have to say anything, that you just know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this is so crazy. Here we are trying to bring light and life and hope and restoration, which has been missing in our families, which only God can give us, and replace our worthlessness and make us worthy and give us hope and feelings
mm-hmm.
of adequacy. And yet they look at you with such shock,
mm-hmm.
you know, that you've gone through it, right?
Right. Well, you know, the way I deal with that now and the attitude that I have now is completely different from my attitude 5 or 6 years ago.
Right.
You know, 5 or 6 years ago, I mean, I remember when I first started dealing with what happened to me, I shouted it from the mountaintops, you know, verbal diarrhea.
Yeah, verbal diarrhea.
I told everybody.
Yeah.
I didn't care
yeah.
who knew. I mean, I was shouting it from the mountaintops. And I did not understand the repercussions of what I was doing. I was putting them in a compromising position.
Well, you want to
I was
be
allowing
heard.
Them. Yeah, and I was allowing them to look at me. You know, that kind of thing, whispering behind my back. You know, I didn't care. I was oblivious to it. And
right.
then it came to a point to where I realized that when I was sharing this information, first of all, I had to learn not to subject myself to verbal diarrhea,
right.
not to tell everything, everybody, everything, you know,
yeah.
you know, things people don't want to hear. You know, I learned how to temper it, and
mm-hmm.
I helped
you
more
learned
people
your boundaries.
By knowing – I learned my boundaries, and then I went to a point to where when I talked about it, and I'll be honest, I was embarrassed, you know, that, yeah, how are they going to judge me? Are they going to be looking down on me? What are they going to think from me? Are they going to think that I'm, you know, have a scarlet letter on my forehead? They're going to,
yeah.
you know, they're going to, you know, feel sorry for me. And, you know, and that was my own low self-esteem.
Right.
Now, as I tell people, of course, I've gotten really good, like I said, you know, I don't have
mm-hmm.
the verbal
stronger,
diarrhea anymore,
yeah.
and I know how to talk about it. I'm no longer embarrassed about it.
Right.
You know, I'm a survivor.
You're empowered.
I host a show. If you
right.
have a problem with that, that's your problem. It's not, you know, my self-esteem does not pivot on perception of me, and that's something hard for survivors especially. I mean, it's hard for normal people. You
it's
know,
hard
but
for
me
survivors. Still when somebody says, "Oh, you chose," my husband's sister
mm-hmm.
just said that to me recently. "Oh,
mm-hmm.
you chose this ministry. You've chose." No, I didn't. I was shocked, and I didn't say anything. So oftentimes I am shocked into silence again. And I should have said, "No, God chose this for me. I went through it,
mm-hmm.
and God's using it for the good," like Joseph with the Bible in the scriptures. That forgave his brothers.
Right.
You know, you brought good out of evil.
Right.
But if I see her again and she says that, which I don't even care if I ever see her again because she's so snotty. And, Wayne said, "Oh, she was always like that. She was always a little spitfire." And, but just some people just rub you the wrong way still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, you know, and then I have to look at it like, why does that bother them? You know, are they a perpetrator? Are they a survivor? You know, are they a victim themselves that haven't dealt with it? You
well,
know,
her,
why her
father committed
are they
suicide.
Snotty? You know, yeah.
So there was, there's deep anger, yeah.
Yeah,
there.
So I don't even get hung up on them. That's their baggage.
That's
luggage.
Their, yeah.
I don't care anymore, you know, and I'm going to talk about it. And you know,
right.
like I said, you can see when you start, it's amazing because I've been in situations where people want to talk about it. They want to talk about it. And then you can see, and I've gotten better about that, and then they get to a shut-off point. You know,
uh-huh.
you can see they're interested, the
right.
window's open, you know, the river's flowing, and then suddenly they just cut it off short. They don't want another
right.
drop of it. And
yeah.
they hit their limit. And I've learned to pick up on those, and I'm not always perfect on it. I make mistakes. But
right.
for the most part, I know when to shut up. I know when to shut the F up. You know,
right?
And you know, okay, I've said enough. I've done enough. You know, they'll, and then
mm-hmm.
a lot of times they'll come back to me. If I overload them, they probably won't bring it up again. You know, they just
yeah.
get overloaded. So
right.
I look at it as an opportunity. If they have a problem with it, then that's their problem. It's no longer my problem. And if she'd have told me you chose this, I would have said, yeah, I did. And I like what you said too. No, God chose this, but yeah, I tell people all the time. Nobody pays me to be on that, my part in ASCA. You know, it doesn't
no.
do anything. It, you know, it's my service to God. It's my way
yes.
of giving back
giving
to God.
Giving back, yeah.
And giving, you know, trying to help the people. You know, I do it for God, you know.
Right.
I do it for God.
You can't
you know,
outgive
yeah.
God.
Yep.
You have, especially if you're healed and especially if you're continuing to heal, It's something you have to do. It's inside of you, and it's a gift that you're giving the world.
Mm-hmm. Right. And
when I was in the Philippines and I did a domestic
mm-hmm.
violence skit with these kids, the youngest he didn't even have a birth certificate because he was trafficked, and he didn't even know how old he was, but I think he might have been about 6 or 7. And all
uh-huh.
the kids in the orphanage, there were about 13, got my book except the very youngest, which might have been about 6. And
right.
I had a 12-year-old come to me afterwards and talk to me, and she asked me to pray with her and pray for her. And the domestic violence skit was phenomenal. Every single place
uh-huh.
we went to, except the largest Philippine hospital, and I did my PowerPoint presentation on rescuing the prisoner when the prisoner was me, and I have bullet points after I share some of my story to tell why I was codependent and why I did rescue, and it was an insecurity. The drug addicts knew I was vulnerable, you know, and I wasn't healed yet. And I didn't
mm-hmm.
have the answers and awareness. Every place except that place, I had an altar call. And people just lined up for anointing oil and being prayed over, including the inmates in the women's and the men's prison. And I'm telling you, I want to go back there someday when COVID is over, and I would love to go back again and reconnect with some of the people that I mean, I left probably 200 books of my books I gave out with my humanitarian aid work and my support material, Beyond the Darkness, Healing for Victims. And so the seeds were planted. And I'd love to go back someday and see how they've grown.
right. Well, you know, I just, I'm not perfect. Nobody on this call is perfect. No one is listening is perfect. You know, if someone, you know, I do it to give back God. You
right.
have voiced that you do it to serve God. God chose you. If anyone
mm-hmm.
who's listening and streaming in, you know, we are three women of faith on here, and that's okay. NASCA is a 501c3, and we support everybody. So I want to make
right.
sure that, you know, anyone listening, you know, you may want to do it, you know, give back for humanity. You may want to do it to serve, you know, serve your fellow human beings. You know, us three, I do it, and Barbara Joy, from what I understand, you know, you serve you know, for our faith, you know, to
I've been in prison with
God.
Sex offenders, and I've spoken for 6 years and brought a team of six. We had training before we, you know, got to go in the treatment center for sex offenders in Massachusetts. But I was I had freedom. And it was phenomenal to walk into that male sex offenders program in chapel. And I think there probably were maybe 25 to 30 men, and the guards were outside. They all heard my sermons, and I, just like when I spoke in the Philippines and I preached in 23 churches or more, I wove my story, my own story, of Lazarus come forth out of the tomb with, you know, scripture, with my own testimony. And the inmates loved having me come in there because they didn't have any hope in there. They got, you know, they had anger management or AA or NA or SA, sexual addictions. You know, they had a lot of various other religions in there that didn't help them. And but when I came in there and did what God instructed me to do, I didn't have training. God trained me by the Holy Spirit. So I prepared 7 sermons when I went to the Philippines. And I recently told Dr. Lena Clark, PhD, who came on my show this summer. And I said, I don't know why God had me just prepare 7. She said, that's the number of completion. I said, oh, you're right. That's I forgot. That's interesting. And that's, you know, God told me certain sermons to give, and they were profound. And I believe they helped people because they need help. They need answers. They need awareness. There's somebody's uncle and brother, and, you know, they don't want to molest, but they were molested, no doubt.
Right, absolutely. Pastor Deborah, what do you think?
God will take, as we all heard, our messes and turn them around.
Yeah.
I got started in a military family, which was trained and never really part of the community. And our job was to go set captives free, other continents, you know, like World War II. Well, I grew up around soldiers, tough, and you weren't a part of the rest of the world. And then I wanted to help people because my father was a psychologist, and that's what military does. We help people. And so the only thing back in the 70s, I think it was psychology or social work. And I went down that, and I got my license as a mental health counselor, and I did it for about 10 years, learned all the stuff and did testing, brain, worked in hospitals and went to jails. And what happened was God took me out of that, and he said, you put that down, and I'm going to teach you how to help people my way. And I had to become a pastor, learn the spiritual, learn about the soul. I got thrown into the occult with people with dark stuff,
right.
Multiple
yes.
personalities, horrible stuff. And I didn't know anything. None of that's taught in psychology.
No.
None of that is taught. I had to learn the spirit world. And then
when
I had to learn, it and tested and tested and tried. I've been shot at, almost killed in my home. Just loving these people. Just say, I love you. I know what you've done. And what God taught me was, anybody I come into contact with, and this will address your mention of that lady you were talking to, they get angry with you talking. I had to learn that God will bring people to you who have had abuse. And they will be interested, and then the walls go up. So you don't get mad at them. And I don't ever ask anybody any questions. I don't have to say anything. Because I know if they come into my contact, whether it's on LinkedIn, social media, in person, in the jail, it doesn't matter. Walmart, God has put them into my path. They got issues.
Right.
And I know what, and your job is to pray with them, teach them if you can, but you're only going to get so far for a while. So I don't ever ask many questions because I already know God's bringing them to me. He says, I'll draw them to you. I'll put something on you, anointing on you. They're going to come to you.
He
and
sure
they want
puts
it,
the
want
anointing.
To,
yep, he does.
They'll want to hear what you have to say. Now, you have to learn how to say that in love.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to learn a lot of things about that dark world that you don't ask, that you don't ask them. But they'll listen to see if you know what's happening. Like, do they have out-of-body experiences? I can talk about it because when I was 4, I was getting my tonsils out in the military. I left my body. I saw that vision for years, didn't know what it was. I can talk to people about when you're being abused, you're having, and they call it, they disassociate from the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
I had to learn about multiple personalities.
I watched Sybil.
I watched the Three Faces of Eve, okay?
Yeah.
I had to read true stories about people, and it wasn't pretty. And this one story was this lady was highly abused by her mom. She went to psychiatrist's, insurance paid, but when it ran out, they were done with her. She got with one. And her insurance ran out, and he said, that's okay, ma'am. I love you with the love of the human. You keep coming. And she started getting healed at home. A lot of her parts and stuff were just disappearing. And I asked God, I said, what is going on? That psychiatrist wasn't getting paid. He never read a Bible scripture to her, never prayed with her.
Mm-hmm.
They never talked about the Bible. He said, no, they didn't. But he generally loved that lady with the love that's in me as a human being. He says, that's the atmosphere that I can work in. And I will heal her to get the glory in the spirit realm against Satan and what he did to her.
Mm-hmm.
Because that atmosphere of love was being from one human to another. He said, that is the realm that I work in. And when that realm was provided to that lady who had help, needed help by the psychiatrist, God said, she wants to be healed. He wants her to be healed. They both want healing. Okay? And they're trying. He's trying with his skills. She's trying. Okay? He says, but the atmosphere, the love connection is there. I will work in it. I will answer their, you know, be healed. Even though they didn't ask me, but I'll get my glory against the person, you know, the thing that caused it, the evil, the wickedness. They may not ever know that God did it, but God would know, the angels would know, Satan would know, all that, that realm would know. So I learned a lot by reading and asking God questions. I'm doing work on LinkedIn. I had a guy today who was suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to, and I have to deal with it right there in the messaging. Okay.
I have a lot of people come to me on LinkedIn, too, and I think it's amazing.
And God will say, hey, he's trying to go all around the world. Google's fixing to spend a lot of money in Africa. People, you can do preach, you can teach, you can, I do deliver.
Right. Yeah, amen.
LinkedIn, on messaging with people that, and they might tell me, I got some of this negativity or some darkness. Can you help me? No problem.
Right. Yeah.
I don't call it what it is. Okay? Some people say, I think I'm cursed. Okay, I'll take care of that. I'm going to do some stuff. I say, the prayer's done. And so you have to be ready. Now, God will bring people, and they will get irritated because if you speak to and you start touching something, they shut down, okay? And they can't, because they can't tolerate too much of it at one time.
Right.
Okay, so you don't get mad at them. You just know, if you know you're called by God to do this work, you don't bring them from anywhere, Walmart, okay? You're going to bring them at the gas station. He's going to bring them in church, no church, going to bring a neighbor, LinkedIn, Facebook. And you have to be ready to do those prayers like, and deliverance work and the altar calls. And I get people saved at LinkedIn, okay? okay? I'm praying to bring them in. We got to get a lot of people out of the Islamic faith that are doing stuff to little kids and the women. Okay, I got asked to go into a refugee camp, okay, over in Syria. Now, I'm not going to be able to go there physically, but I made a video, and I put it up, and it gets sent through a psychiatrist. You can go all sorts. So if you know God's called you to help people get healed, find him, we can't really, you can pray to, according to Matthew 18:18, bind some of the works. I'll tell you something I prayed. I'd pray, Father, when that stopped their hands in midair, turn on the light, make a radio come on. I think of everything to disrupt in prayer. I know it goes on. I don't get a lot of sleep a lot because that's when it goes on. I also pray, I know the little spirit's going to leave the body. And I say, Father, put an angel, put me there, wait. I'll stand with them, hold them. While their body's going through some stuff, I can't stop it. But I can minister to the spirit where you are. So I just learned how to go, I don't need to ask you any questions. You get upset. I know why they're upset all the stuff that happened to them. And if you're called, God will bring them from everywhere anyway. You'll have a chance. And don't get mad at them because they got issues.
That's right. Figured,
you know, what are they telling us in mental health? I don't know, 3 or 4 people out of 5 got issues. And now we throw in COVID and all this socialism, whatever it is. It's worse. So you just have to know whether it's on Facebook. Even those people that do the sexual pictures and things, okay, they're serving darkness. Do they know it? Some do. Some are forced. But through prayer, you can, other people can help. There's a great video I found up. This pastor and his wife went to an Islamic country, opened a little church. ISIS came in, killed them. All right. Then God told another family, you go back to that same building, that same church, and says, they're going to kill us. You go. They went. ISIS came in. Okay. And blindfolded the pastor, took him off, took him to a building somewhere, took the blindfolders off and said, you see these 900 Muslim people? They all had one dream in one night that they were guilty of killing that other pastor who had done nothing to them. And they can't get this guilt lifted off. And they were told in the dream that they would come past. Now, this was some praying women praying for God to reach out to the Muslims and the imams.
Yeah, God's vision come to people in dreams, for sure.
So you have to know that's going on. You might get somebody on LinkedIn, Facebook, and you don't know. They may not put their picture up. But when you went to the Philippines, oh, there's a lot of bad stuff there.
Oh, I
and
know. And God's guardian angels surrounded us when ISIS
and
was right there in the woods, in the jungle.
And when what happens is, if you know God's called you to this, my life wasn't great. Nobody's was, okay? We used Joseph and Moses and stuff. But he'll teach you, prepare you, heal you. I sat at home for 2 years. I go, God says, you're going to stay at home. I go, for what? You need some healing. For what? About 30, 40 years of ick. Okay. Me and the trees and the squirrels, we talked and the word of God.
Yeah, God did that with me.
And you
I stayed in the word for several years before God prepared me for this kind of a work.
Now you're ready. Doesn't matter where you go.
Right.
You can get a phone call on NASCA.
Yep.
You can say, God, take this. And spread it all out over everywhere.
Oh, he's doing it. He's doing it with my CBN Asia 700 Club. It's going everywhere. Thousands of people.
Social workers, psychiatrists,
PhDs are all getting it.
Well, remember, a lot of them want to help people. But they don't believe in, if they do believe in God, they cannot, by their license, bring him in. Because they are...
Unless the other person speaks about God.
Well,
if their client speaks about God, then they can say something.
But they really, it's not, they're diagnosing a medical, biological condition to get their insurance. A lot of them have been abused. They just ain't going to tell you. A lot of them have multiple personalities. They're in denial. They close, and they need help because we want them helping people. They got it, okay? And so God will put everybody that needs Him and His way of healing in your life. So that's how I have addressed it. I don't have to worry about it. I just do my thing. You know, whether you write a book or a story or page, I don't do Facebook, but my videos, I give altar calls. I know everybody needs it. Hebrews 4:12. They all need healing. They all need information. They need altar calls. I just had a guy today. He doesn't hear God's voice because he's got things in the way. So I said, I just prayed for that, took care of that now, and then God will give me open visions, and I'll see him and God and his little spirit just in hugging and love. But we have a big, it's sort of a, I don't know, global calling, but yet we can go in the natural stuff. That's how I have approached. Anybody comes to me, I don't care where it's at, they need us with what we carry to help them.
I agree.
Right.
And, you know, and so you don't have to apologize yourself. You know, you just be sweet and, you know, gentle as a dove.
Mm-hmm.
And we're out there among the wolves. And you expect them to growl and bite at you and stuff, you know, because, but we're supposed to be gentle. And we're going to run up against religion, you know, the pastors and the stuff. Jesus had trouble with them, okay?
Yeah,
and
sure
I even had trouble on LinkedIn with people said a woman shouldn't be doing this and shouldn't be doing that and all that. And they go, oh, God, I try not to respond back and get into that. Lord, we need to touch out what Paul says in Galatians. He's just a child because he's still in division. And so females, you know, have a harder time. But I come in as a mama. I'll be your spiritual mama because that's the anchor of the soul, mama. Which produced the love. So I
watch
some of the weirdest people you would think, and I just call them on LinkedIn, love your spiritual mother. And they call me back mom. Once they give me that title, mom, they're a child to me. They're giving me permission to teach them, educate them. I send them videos, watch this and go. So I do a spiritual adoption because a lot of them aren't ready yet to go straight to the Father, done bad things, you know. A lot of them had the Word of God read to them during this, and they dressed up as Catholic priests because they want to distort the Father's view, not the Mother's. So I come
I had one woman that was that had split personality. She had about 40 different ones speak at a conference, and she had a father that sexually abused her that was a pastor, and her mother was a white witch. So she was taken into the woods and made to drink blood from animals, and she couldn't go into the church and have communion. And she was, like you just said, she had one woman that had such faith and such love that just loved on her and loved on her and loved on her and brought her back. And she was right in the front row crying while this young African-American
when you do
woman.
When you gave those altar calls in the Philippines, you were talking about the love of God that heals you.
Right.
And you have to know that everyone in that audience, whether they were sexually abused or not, there was some kind of abandonment, rejection.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. They
a lot of them were Muslims, Muslim women, and Catholic women, and
they're easy. The Muslim women, because you know,
I love them.
If you study, and as us, we have to study all the religions. There's more Muslims than there are Christians, but it's that love of God, and so your voice has to do that. You be ready at all times, and you connect on LinkedIn and Facebook. And you connect to, you'll be able to speak to the Crown Prince of Dubai and call him spiritual son. You should be able to do that because God should be able to send us because they all need
Well, I want to take it back because we don't have a lot of time left, and I want to make sure that, you know, the people, I want to make sure that I have a disclaimer for NASCA because, you know, like I said, we're all women of faith, but we have people who may be listening who, you know, may or may not, you know, some people have been betrayed by the church. Some people, you know, They may be spiritual. You know, we have agnostic. You know, I'm a woman of faith, but I want to make sure that anybody's listening to know that NASCA, it doesn't matter to us, you know, what, like you said, what your religion is, you know, whether mm-hmm. you're Muslim or Pentecostal or, you know, agnostic or, you know, whatever, or just spiritual or just intelligent design or, you know, atheist. You know, we've had some atheists on here. We support everybody, but everybody on this panel are women of faith, and my faith has helped me through it. There's, you know, and I would encourage anybody to find their spiritual realm, but I want to make sure that people who may be listening, you know, I don't want them to think. For me, you know, being spiritual and having my faith in God has helped me a lot. But if you're not there, anyone who may be listening, streaming in, because we know we have a lot of people streaming in, you may get to that point, you may not. It's helped me. But I think one of the things that I understood you to say, Pastor Deborah, is, you know, you just get involved. You know, a lot of times it's a hard concept to fathom that when we start helping other survivors, it helps us heal as well. It's kind of a weird thing, because who would have thought that me helping somebody else is going to help me? But it does. It works.
Amen.
So I love y'all's message of getting plugged in, you know, helping people. And I agree with you, Pastor Deborah. People do, and I said it earlier, that you can tell, you can almost see it on their face where the water stops. I think I said the river closes up. You know, the door is open and they shut the door because they've had enough. They can't really, and I've gotten to that point myself as well. Well, I couldn't take in any more at that point.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
And that happens in therapy. You know, people shut down in relationships, but they take in as much as, it's sort of like, somebody that is either starving or so thirsty, they can't take much mm-hmm. of what you're saying. Just a little.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
little.
We have to know that and that how they're going to respond. But mm-hmm. you leave the door and say, hey, you know, you call me anytime and we can keep on talking. You know, I know this stuff can be. And you have to be there knowing that mm-hmm. some people are just going to. And how it works is sometimes the shutdown, if you watch them carefully, they'll blink their eyes and they off into another personality.
Right.
And so, and because they can't, that one that's there might be reaching out, but it's not, it's sort of the front one. And I had to deal with the light side ones that were Christians and the dark side ones that were Satanists. But you learn and you get taught that just a little bit, love hurts people. It is frightening mm-hmm. that we as people would love them without hurting them. Love's been twisted.
Right.
It's been perverted. It's and they're afraid of it. They don't trust you. So sometimes it takes a while.
Right.
Your words have to be sweet mm-hmm. and kind. Then what they usually do is they will check you out on Facebook, LinkedIn, listen to your messages, see if maybe what you're saying is they maybe could believe it. And so they're going to check you out. And so
you also have to be careful not to be drained, though, by people. Yeah, because we can't just keep giving without receiving back. And
what I do is, like, if somebody from NASCA calls me on the contact list, they just want to talk for hours and go over all. I said, I don't do that. I go, when were you in therapy last? Who's your counselor? What books have you read? What webinars have you watched? None. I said, honey, you aren't seeking healing. Because they will, and I learned, Satan does this. I want your joy. And if I got to steal your energy and your time to get it, then you get wore out. And then you'll get mad at other people. So he'll use people with issues to drain you.
Yeah, you've got to be careful. Take care of yourself.
Yes, ma'am.
A lot of times because we, as mothers, as grandmothers, as parents, we've given, you know, that's how we've grown up. And our parents did the same thing, and our grandparents did the same thing. But that's the boundaries we have to learn. And, yeah.
Well, we can guide folks, and I don't want to talk over anybody because of with people who are listening. So forgive me if I've talked over you guys.
No, you're fine.
I wanted to. Okay, well, I wanted to get this in. We've only got like 4 minutes left. But, you know, a lot of times we can guide people to, you know, they may be reaching out. We may be the first person they've reached out to. They may not have had a chance to read a book. You know, they may have just stumbled upon NASCA and said, well, let me just call support. But I agree with that, Pastor Deborah, that we can guide them. Well, my recommendation is to go get some brochures and go look at this and hear some information and go on the NASCA website and give them some tools that they can,
uh-huh.
you know, pick up on. I had a gentleman uh-huh. call me. I was on a Saturday. I was actually working. We had a big event here at the club, and I was on my way, and he called me. And bless his heart, you know, he had called several people in NASCA, and he was toying with forgiveness. And I've got uh-huh. a little bit of different perspective. And, I told him, I said, well, I've only got a few minutes, and he kept going on and on and on. And I didn't want to cut him off, but I wanted to support him as well. So I think he just wanted to go on until I told him what he wanted to hear. But I don't think I was ever going to tell him what he wanted to hear. I had to tell him, you know, my story, my perspective, what's worked for me. And it was a really good conversation. You know, I think I helped the guy. I think I gave him, if nothing else, I expanded his horizon on the subject, you know, in a couple of areas. And that's the best I can do. And, you know, he hasn't called me back since. I invited him to call me back. But we, you know, we're here again. You know, I'm a survivor of child abuse, you know, physical, mental, very, you know, verbal, physical, you know, just being put down and, you know, the attempts of sexual abuse. So I've been through it. And I've come a long way. You know, Steve, he hasn't been on here. And something you said, Pastor Deborah, and I want to stop it here and turn it back over to Barbara Joy for a minute. But he said, you know, I thought abuse was love. A lot of times they think that uh-huh. the abuse is love. We had one girl who came on, and she went from foster care to foster care. You know, she didn't think she was loved unless they sexually abused her. And
right.
when she got a foster family that didn't abuse her, she didn't know how to take it. She thought they didn't love her. It took took her a while to realize that abuse isn't love.
No.
So, we've only got 2 minutes, Barbara. I want to give Pastor Deborah a chance to do some final words, but I wanted to give you maybe a minute to give your final thoughts, and then I'll give Deborah a chance. So, Barbara Joy, we've got 2 minutes left, but go ahead, Barbara.
Well, you mentioned verbal abuse. I too have gone through that, and there's just a little saying that I want to say: a broken bone can heal, but the wound a word opens can fester forever.
Uh-huh.
And we don't deserve to be abused verbally, sexually, emotionally, physically, any which way, financially. But we can say no, and we need to say no when we
uh-huh.
know we're being abused, and it isn't our fault. So if you're listening tonight and you have gone through any kind of abuse of any kind, don't ever attach yourself to a person, a place, a company, or a project. Attach yourself to a mission, a calling, or a purpose only. That's how you keep your peace.
Absolutely. Thank you, Barbara Joy. Well said. Pastor Deborah, you only have a couple of seconds, but I wanted to give you a chance to get a couple of final
okay.
words in.
I think the greatest thing that NASCA is doing is it is reaching out, it's educating people, which is a sign of love. It provides
mm-hmm.
people, you know, on the contact and a lot of people that have been healed, because
mm-hmm.
love is the way it's going. It's love is being demonstrated by NASCA,
right.
by the radio shows, like with Barbara. And that is the healing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the
mm-hmm.
atmosphere.
Absolutely.
And,
okay.
okay? And
well,
it takes a long time with some people, but love
right.
is the answer.
Amen.
Love is the answer. There you go. We are completely out of time. Barbara Joy, it's been a great show as always. Pastor Deborah, thank you for calling in, and thank you for participating. Both of you guys, both of you ladies have been absolutely awesome. I've enjoyed the show. So with that said, I'm going to end the show by saying God bless the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all.